ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Backlot. We are the Backlot Boys. This is episode 9, and we have an amazing series of topics for you today based around Star Wars Land, Galaxy's Edge, coming to Disneyland, Disney World very, very soon. And how excited are you for Star Wars Land? Sometimes I call it Star Wars Land. I know it's Galaxy's Edge, but it's been stuck in my head because I've been watching this land get constructed long before it had a name. How excited are you, Borguna?
I can't wait. I think there's going to be a lot of neat stuff with it. I'm really excited for the food offerings because, you know, they've gone back and forth with some of the rides, what's going to be open on opening day, what we're going to have to wait on a little bit. The only thing that's really, they've really nailed down, and they've shared quite a few photos, and, you know, they're out of that rendering stage. They're showing photos. I'm stoked about the food. Can't wait for the food offerings.
Yes, I'm very, very excited about the lightsaber building.
Lightsaber building, huh?
Yeah.
Is that like, you remember that guy? He was online like years ago. He was that kid. He had the lightsaber. He's doing the thing in the garage. There's like a ping pong table in the background. Star Wars kid or whatever. That's what the lightsaber building is going to be like?
I'm unfamiliar with this lightsaber kid.
Oh, it's old. The Star Wars kid. It was like one of the first, like, you know, YouTube comes out. You know, they had like the, what was that thing? They did the thing with the Chronicles of Narnia and the cupcakes or whatever. Like, Star Wars kid was right around that same time.
You know, as a YouTuber, I have no idea what you're talking about. I do feel bad at this point.
Fair enough. But, you know, needless to say, I'm very excited. I can't wait to drink the Blue Banta milk. But I'm sure, you know, we're going to get into some in-depth stuff and all kinds of good stuff on Star Wars Land today. Can't wait. Galaxy's Edge.
Until then.
Galaxy's Wedge? No, Edge. There it goes.
They just sell a wedge of cheese. Let's jump into the news.
All right. So in the news, I've got about three things here. Scar. The first one, it was actually just brought to my attention just a few minutes ago.
Oh.
And this has to do with a series of tweets that came from Abigail Disney, you know, Roy's granddaughter. I'm sure you've seen some of this stuff. Have you?
No, I'm actually excited about this. I got a little worried. Every time you hear a string of tweets, you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But I'm optimistic this is good.
Yeah, she's okay.
I've never heard of her, so I'm excited. Now someone to follow on Twitter.
Oh, you don't know anything.
Okay, I'm going in blind here.
Okay, a little background. Abigail Disney. She is Roy's granddaughter and the daughter of Roy E. Disney.
Oh, okay. Filmmaker. I know who this is. Never mind.
Now you're on board. So filmmaker, you know, like $500 million net worth. She, you know, so you think like filmmaker that she's just like only in like this kind of artsy category, but, you know, degrees from Yale, Stanford, Columbia. Kind of interesting, though, for, you know, considering that net worth, like she's denied a lot of the affluence that goes along with that, I guess. You know, the family has that. They've got a private 737. She never flies on it because of the environmental impact. And I think they said, you know, by the age of 21, she'd already given away $71 million to different causes and things like that. She's a lot of neat stuff. But anyway, so these tweets I was talking about, the tweets are with regards to Bob Iger's salary.
Oh, no, busted. Can I just interject? I've met this person before. Like, just a brief like handshake at the shareholders meeting. I feel terrible.
Sure.
You just threw that out there. I forgot who she was. I do remember her. And he has a son, right, too? A son and a daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Sure I remember enough. Them from a shareholders meeting. Okay.
So you shook her hand.
Yeah.
Like, was it a strong handshake? Was it a, you know, dead fish? Somewhere in between?
Someday I'm going to talk about that shareholders meeting because there was a lot went on
You
there.
Allude to it a lot. You've brought, you know, people have been, like, who is sleeping? Who is there that was sleeping?
Marty Sklar. I didn't get to meet him because the man was asleep the entire time and I did not want to wake the man because I have too much respect for him.
Well, just imagine if you would have woken him up and he was having a dream about something and maybe, like, you know, when you get woken up immediately from the dream, sometimes you can remember more about it. You could have used that and brought that. There could be a whole new attraction had you woken up. So where you think that, you know, you think that maybe you saved things, but you should have woken him up is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. The only benefit of ever being in a wheelchair is that the wheelchair area was down with all of them in the roped off area. So that's why I got to be in that area because of the wheelchair.
There's a string of tweets that goes out, and it's basically all in regards to Bob Iger's salary, which according to Disney is 90% performance-based, and that salary, friends, is $66 million a year.
Oh,
now, that's not like, it's not like on his agreement it says that, but that's, you know, with his salary plus his, you know, his commissions, basically his bonus structure, $66 million. So how that's performance-based makes absolutely no sense, but Disney, of course, defends it. And so the string of tweets that Abigail puts out there is she's basically offering different ways that this could be handled that would, mm-hmm. you know, better serve the company, its employees, and, you know, society in general. It's very interesting. She's, you know, extremely insightful. Like, this wasn't just one of those things where, like, and I don't, this is just a straight up example, but Katy Perry goes on like, you know, like, everybody that has, you know, $10 million or more in the bank should get it out and just throw it out of a helicopter in the middle of the street. Like, I know she didn't say that. She probably doesn't feel that way, but people make like crazy proclamations about what, you know, business owners and things like that, what these people should be doing with their money. It's easy to tell somebody else what to do with your dough. But anyway, but what she offered, like, kind of real, you know, potential options for this. You know, one of those would be, you know, Iger could basically, he could drop from 66 million to 10 million a year, God forbid. And every furry face facilities custodian and florist at Disneyland Park get a 15% raise.
Wow.
Yeah, everybody there, everybody at Disneyland, 15% raise. So that's something that could happen if he would be willing to, you know, to go down a little bit. You know, one of the things that she said that really kind of struck me was, you know, she said, you need to pay your employees what they need to be paid to conduct their lives successfully. It's a good point. No. Now, we had a couple episodes ago, it could have been the last one, I can't really remember, because like you said, it's been a while. We talked about, you know, the minimum wage thing, the Bernie Sanders thing, and just, you know, how they're paying people and some of their employees, not so much on the Florida side, but their California employees, some of them are sleeping in the car, you know, they can't afford their insulin. There's a lot of problems. And this seems to be kind of, amounting a little bit, but I don't know if this will ever turn into anything. Obviously, in Walt Disney World, they did raise that. They did raise their hourly wage. Like, it's like $15 with the Fed. What is the Fed minimum? It's like $7.50, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So not too bad, but again, still like with like one of the most profitable companies in the world to be in a position where profitable at size. You know, to be in a position where you're only doubling like a Fed minimum is pretty weak in my opinion and others. But anyway. Like I said, there's all these tweets going out and she's, you know, she's speaking out against this quite a bit. You know, but the defense again with Disney is saying, you know, look at what the company has become, you know, in just a fairly, you know, what was his name? You know, he had the big forehead and the Disney Eisner? Decade and Eisner. So Eisner had his Disney decade. Well, you know, Roy's basically had his, you know, or not Roy, he had his time. Iger has had his Disney decade. You know, in 2005, the shares were sitting at, and he came on in 2005, and we talked about this just a few days ago.
Yeah.
He came on in 05, you know, share price was $24. Right now it's 132. So he has made, so for those out there that have tons and tons of shares, he's made those people a lot of money. So obviously mm-hmm. the shareholders are fairly happy with him. Different divisions within the park, some of the, both the park and lots of different aspects of the company, infrastructure wise, not everybody's a huge fan. They don't know if that money is necessarily being put back into the right places. And obviously, you know, $66 million a year going back into Eisner, some of this, a big chunk of this has to do with, you know, the Fox buy and all that kind of stuff. So. Just kind of interesting. I didn't know if you you had an ear to the street on that one. It was,
no, that's the first I've heard of it. And she put that into like a really articulate way, whereas a lot of people who put out those arguments don't put them out in a very good way. So
yeah,
that she did a good job on that. I think Iger could probably get away with $10 million. I mean, he's gonna have to cut back a little, you know, just a little bit.
Yeah.
But come on, like that amount is staggering because. Oh man, I'd like to know his salary when he first came in because that is a lot of money. Like I can't even fathom like that much a year. That's insane.
Like, and you know, we've talked about this. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but you and I have discussed, you know, CEO salaries and where it gets to a point where how do you in good faith articulate that your CEO is valued at that 66 million? You know, I know that not every day he puts in the work and does the time to earn $66 million at the end of the year. I know that he puts things in place that allow that money to come in and, you know, at different points and different divisions. There's a whole thing, you know, economists can look into that with a lot more detail than they have. But that just, to me, that just seems so absurd.
You know, like, yeah, it's an absurd amount of money. And then for his case, too, is like, I think he's done more than Eisner has ever done, you know. securing the deal with Pixar to Star Wars mm-hmm. to Marvel, all these things. But in the end of the day, you have to look at it as like, is that still worth 60 something million dollars? Like that, yeah. That's incredible. But yeah, I'd like to read her tweets. That does sound
When you get a chance, you'll check it out. I mean, I'm trying to think here. I believe so. You had asked about the pricing, or not pricing, but what was his salary when he first came on board? I think his first year was around 1.5 million. You know, 06. I think he was making 2 million.
That's what I was thinking.
His cash bonus. I think his cash bonus, however, you know, on those years, his cash bonus may have been sitting at around 15 million. I could be wrong, but obviously, with a lot of these guys, you know, their cash bonuses and things like that, and their incentive packages are quite a bit higher than what they were making. So I think he earned 17 million in 06, but his actual salary was just around 2 million. So either way, I mean, he's making three times as much as he made when he came on board. But he, as you just mentioned a minute ago, he's also proven himself. Disney has had an incredible 10 years from a financial perspective. Now, did they lose some creativity by bringing in such a numbers oriented guy? Maybe. Maybe.
A lot of the things with Iger was that Iger would, kind of keep the back end together while the creatives do their thing. But I don't know if that 100% has turned out to be. He's done a lot of good stuff. But once again, you have to look at it. It was like $66 million a year.
Yeah.
And where could half of that money could go back into the parks or to employees? Because I mean, if you run inflation numbers on employees, there's some people would say that they're making less than they did in the 50s. If you were to compare the salaries to today, I don't know.
Of living alone, it's absurd. And so, good for Abigail for bringing some of this stuff up, and good for her for bringing it up in a way that, that's constructive, that would actually allow somebody or, a couple of board members to take a look at it and say, hey, maybe there is something we should be doing here. But, that's the rest of that conversation is for another day. But yeah, I did think I would bring that up because she was fairly outspoken on this. And it sounds like people are listening. I mean, a lot of news networks picked them up. Most of the details that I gathered from this, obviously, between the tweets and, I looked at some stuff on CNN and CNBC. But yeah, just about every network has something to say about it. So.
All right. What else do we got for news? What else is going on?
There's not too much because this is so Star Wars heavy. Mm-hmm. There Disneyland, of course, tragic, horrible events at Notre Dame, really sad deal there. And but Disney has offered, $5 million to tack on to the rebuild fund. And I know that pales in comparison to a lot of the other donations, but they didn't have to give him a penny, $5 million. Hey, it'll do something. It'll pay for the scaffolding. I don't know what it'll do, but that wasn't too bad. I was happy to see some involvement. Lastly, I guess I'll bring this up and, you've got all the facts on this. I know very little, but, Disney, of course, I think it was April 4th. They decided to webcast, Investors Day, which was that the first time they've done that, or have they done that for a while?
As far as I know, I have no idea. That was the first I've heard of it.
Okay. So I looked back through a couple years worth of press releases, and it doesn't seem like this is something that has occurred in the past. So, something new. And one of the biggest things that they brought up, if not the biggest, some of it had to do with some SEC stuff and a couple of just, financial minutiae around the Fox buyout. But a lot of it was around the streaming service. They announced this at Investors Day and, talked about, hey, this is going to kick off in November and here's some more details. So why don't you, you've got a lot of information on this and a lot of passion, a lot of heart. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it? What are you excited for? But give us the facts,
Well, originally I was just kind of like, oh, okay, the streaming service. But now I'm like super excited. First, they showed an image of the interface and it looks like Apple TV. If you're familiar with how Apple TV organizes the apps like your Netflix, your Prime, your YouTube, things like that. It's organized like that. But Star Wars, Marvel, animation, Pixar, stuff like that. It looks really like a really good interface. So that's looking good. It also seems like they're taking their time with the whole thing to make sure it's good off the bat instead of rush it out. So I do appreciate that. So the service is actually going to come in at $6.99 a month, which is quite a bit cheaper than Netflix. That is
okay. That's what Netflix is one of those things that I think most of us probably just have it It's set on auto pay. We never see a bill for it. What does Netflix cost? Streaming the streaming service of it.
Like $12 or $14. I know I could be way off on that, but I'm not 100% sure. $69 a year. That is not, to me, a huge cost when you consider the vast library that this is going to contain. This is going to contain all of Disney's live action movies. This is going to contain all of Pixar, all of Disney animation. And then now that the Fox deal has gone through, it's going to contain all of National Geographic. And I'm not sure about a lot of the other things. I have heard from places that like things like The Simpsons is going to be on there, but I've never 100% been able to confirm that. So things like X-Files too would be in that Simpsons category, but I still don't know if that's true or not. So that's hold that as a grain of salt. And then there'll be original content. So far they've announced Mandalorians. So that's the Star Wars thing, you know, Boba Fett, you know, the helmet. And then there is another Star Wars show, and that's based on the guy from Rogue One and his robot, you know, just kind of like a duo heading out doing their thing, which seems cool.
Who is his robot in Rogue One? Who is that guy?
I don't know, but I loved it. It was one of my favorite Star Wars characters. He was really funny, but not over the top, which Star Wars can take it way over the top sometimes when they're trying to be,
if you will,
Jar Jar. When they're trying to be funny and all. They say that there are 7,500 TV shows. That's a lot of TV shows. I didn't even know there was 7,500 TV shows at all, but that's what they listed in 500 movies.
That's a lot.
Big difference between the TV and the movies. Once again, the numbers there, the numbers that I can tell you is it's going to be $6.99 and it's going to come out November 12, 2019.
Okay. So of these, like, you know, tons and tons of movies and TV shows, is there going to be any original content, anything new, something we've never seen before? What can we expect with regards to the existing things, the things that they bought from Fox and, you know, this Marvel stuff and, you know, Pixar movies that we've, you know, we love, but we've all seen. Anything new?
Yeah, probably. I think there is something that I'm looking forward to. And they spoke about there being a documentary about Imagineering. Now, Lisa Iwerks, daughter or granddaughter of Iwerks himself, you know, classic guy back in the day, holding it down.
Big and
she's been making a documentary about Imagineering for like 10 years now. And I go on this like once a year to her website and it's still in production. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then recently she put out a statement, I think it was maybe on their Facebook page or something, that's still in production. We're still doing it. We just completed an interview. I think it was maybe with Bob Iger. And I think that might be what's going to be released on the streaming service. And if it's the case, this documentary is going to be the best thing on the parks in Imagineering, because she's who did the myth, the man behind the name, whatever, Walt Disney thing a couple years back. Was a really good documentary, and I am really looking forward to that. So I hope this unnamed Imagineering documentary is Lisa Iwerks' things that she's been working on.
So now, are you talking about Lisa Dortch? Because you keep saying Iwerks, but Iwerks is the name of the company, right? Or that's the name of that division?
That's the name of her own production company.
Okay. I was very confused. That's kind of cool. That'll be neat. You know, did you ever see, I think I shared it with you at one point, but I'm sure some of viewers, you guys maybe have seen this, come across it on social media, but there was one of those movie posters or promotions that they look so real and they're so well done and you get so excited and it turns out that they're fake, but it basically showed an image of a rail car. It was as if you were in kind of the hallway walking down this train car, and you looked into one of the cars and one of the little compartments, if you will. You see, you know, the two benches each facing each other, and there's a kid, and he's sitting on one, a kid, you know, he's a teenager or something, and he's sitting on there, he's looking out the window, and I think in the reflection of the window is looking back at him is Mickey. But the kid, I think they actually used, I don't know how they did this, it was extremely well done, but it was, the guy from The Notebook, I'm blanking on the name right now, but, heartthrob, he was playing Walt Disney, and it was supposed to be this Walt Disney biopic, but obviously it never came out, and I think it was just, it's just a joke. But so with that massive letdown, it is nice to hear that maybe they are going to do something about Imagineering. So yeah, that would be really great.
Very excited about that. Cool. So any other news, or is that all wrapped up?
Yeah, you know, that's actually about it. I think we sailed through that. You know, we talked about the finances, Notre Dame, and then we did a little stuff here on the streaming. I will say one thing that I'm looking forward to with the streaming service. We all know him. We love him from Jurassic Park. The chaos theory, the mathematician, Jeff Goldblum, is going to have his own show on the streaming service. Yep, it's called The World According to Jeff Goldblum. It's really going to be kind of a behind-the-curtain peek, looking at ordinary objects or ordinary solutions or ordinary things that occur in, you know, around, or, you know, something that's produced, like a terracotta pot, for example.
This is just an April Fool's joke.
What's the background on that? How'd that all come to be? What are the sciences? What's the magic behind that? That is going to be a show, The World According to Jeff Goldblum. I am not joking. So you're welcome. And I think it's going to be a great show. I can't wait.
All right. So with the terracotta pot, let's jump into Star Wars land. I'm going to call it Galaxy's Edge from now on, because that's the actual name of it. But we finally got the date of opening, and it's going to be opening in Disneyland first, and that is going to be May 31st, and then Disney World, it's going to be opening on August 29th. So it's coming, but there is a catch to this, which is disappointing. Do you know what that is?
All right. Well, I know a couple things, a couple caveats, but I don't know what the catch is you're talking about. So being the authority on this, I'll have you go ahead and release that.
So, you know, there's the Millennium Falcon ride coming out. You control it. It's just crazy cool technology. Think of it as like Star Tours 3.0, because the current version is like 2.0. The Rise of the Resistance, the big one, the real ride, the practical sets, the animatronics, the whole thing.
The big top. Yeah.
That has most likely no chance of opening this year.
What? No chance? I thought maybe we would just see something in December. Like, what is the holdup? What's going on there?
Well, there's a lot of rumors. There's rumors that they wanted to push the openings of these two attractions to try to like smooth out the crowd. So maybe people would wait, and then some people can't wait. But I don't think that's the case. The main rumor going around is that the attraction is just not done. The trackless ride systems inside of it are not working. So this ride has portions where it goes into elevators and goes up into different stories, similar to Universal does for their Transformers ride. It's a multi-level ride, and you don't even know it in that attraction. Is like all of a sudden you're on an elevator, but you don't really know it, and you're going up and down. But apparently with this attraction, it's trackless. So if it doesn't meet its mark, then the ride shuts down. So if the vehicle comes in but misses its mark by like 2 inches, the ride's just going to shut down. So I guess that is the prevailing rumor at the moment, is that ride system is not working, and that their main contractor for that technology got like fired, or they canceled a contract at some point and they went with another one, and they're having a bunch of trouble. So that is a rumor. So we'll see what it becomes, but most likely we will not see it this year, sadly.
But Disney's been doing trackless rides for quite a while now.
But this rumor suggests
they've moved from areas to areas. Why is this one so different?
Well, this rumor suggests that there is a contractor that used to do their work in this field, but they have someone else doing it, and they might not be up to the same level as these other people. And is that rumor true? This is just rumors that cast members have been saying, you know, could be true, could not be true. We'll see what comes of it. But there are some good stuff, because Millennium Falcon looks like a ton of fun. There's going to be actual animatronics in the queue, you know, explaining the stories and stuff like that. There is a wheelchair accessible vehicle, which makes me excited that, you know, everybody gets a chance to enjoy it.
How does that particular one work? So we've seen different variations on the accessible vehicles. You know, we've seen the things on a couple of the Jungle Cruise boats. You roll in there, you're sitting in the middle, kind of the same thing for one of those Small World boats. Pirates doesn't have that, but probably because of the hills. But how does this one work?
They've said it's a wheelchair accessible cabin. So would they allow you to stay in the vehicle? I don't think so, because I'd assume that the actual cockpit's going to rotate and move around to give motion to the screen, which would make it, I think, unsafe to have somebody sitting in a wheelchair. I think it's wider doors, maybe one seat's missing, or something like that, that you can transfer onto, which is what I hope is the case, because I'm excited about it. Now there's like four turntables, and then each turntable has like two mechanisms or something like that. So one of those particular turntables has a wheelchair accessible vehicle on it, which I'm excited
about. How mad would you be if it turned out that the accessible variation of the ride was like Finding Nemo, where you're just in that room and there's like a little window with a bunch of bubbles, like a bubble curtain, and then, you know, some Harry Connick Jr. playing in the background. The music would be good, but, you know, could you imagine? Oh, man.
I would have the fury and the passion of a thousand scars upon me. Oh my gosh, I couldn't even, you know, I was just good natured about the Finding Nemo one. I was just excited to get back to the parks. It was the first time I was in a wheelchair. I mean, I was like, I'm in here, but I knew that my mom and dad were enjoying the ride. But if I went into Star Wars Land and he was like, oh, actually, sir, there's a room and a door here. We're just going to slide you on in here and we're going to turn this on, and I would die. I would just die.
And
right
when
there.
They tell you that, they kind of they crouch down a little bit and they tilt their head. You know how people do that sometimes? They got to give you the bad news, and they're trying to be compassionate, but it's kind of condescending, and they tilt their head, like they'll tell you that, and it's just
hand
like,
on the knee.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, maybe definitely a hand on the knee, a peer into the eyes. You know, just trying to make you feel better about the whole thing, and it's just I just start throwing stuff at that point. But that's not the case. I just thought I'd just kind of test the water, see what you thought. Worst case scenario. Okay. So that ride's not going to be open. It's because of this stuff with the company and with, who knows what else potentially with that. Okay. Well, so at least, I think what's important here is that you were honest. You were upfront with myself, with the viewers. You gave the bad news first. Mm-hmm. So you get that out of the way. Obviously that ride's going to be out of control. I know some people can't wait. They're going to lose it, but we could probably wait. We've waited a long time for this as it is. Mm-hmm. What else can we, what else should we be excited about?
Well, besides Millennium Falcon, and I don't really even want to spoil too much about that. But I will say that the animatronic that explains the story of the ride in there, he is unbelievable. So if I'm not mistaken, which I probably am, he is the second animatronic to be fully electrified, where he uses no hydraulics. So the first one was the shaman in Navi River Journey in Animal Kingdom in the Pandora area. So when you see under the skin of this character, it's incredible the detail, these little electric motors that are applying all the motion for the character instead of, the traditional hydraulics and stuff like that.
Hydraulics are a mess. Tubes can break sometimes. There's stuff squirts all over. There's oil. Then somebody slips and you've got like OSHA coming in with the hard hats and the clipboards, and people are getting in trouble. And, there's tape being taped up around stuff. So by doing that, I'm assuming that, less downtime, hopefully.
Maybe. I know that the first start of using this technology was the newer Abraham Lincoln figure in the, Great Movements with Mr. Lincoln. And I know they used it just in the face, but this is like the second time now, I guess, they've used it, full body motion. It is incredible. So you can find these videos online if you're looking for them. But what's great is the food and the merch.
Full frontal droid, I think, is what you're going to want to check out. So you were talking about the food there, it sounded like.
Yeah. So the food and the merch. I don't know where you want to start. Do you want to start with food? Do you want to start with the merch?
Can I interject? May I say something?
Yeah.
Okay. So you were you going to get to the thing about the reservations and the exploration blocks of time?
Yeah, we should talk about that. Yeah, we should talk about that, because if people are going, they're going to need to know this information.
Yeah, let's get this out of the gate, because they might, and obviously we don't want you to tune out of the podcast right now, but if you're here for the facts, you're here for the deets on getting yourself a nice reservation for this, listen no further. We should be able to give you a little bit of information. I'll say a few things. Scar, you correct me if I'm wrong, and then you take it away with the details. But as of right now, according to most news sources, Forbes included, the hotels are selling out, for this whole thing, in preparation of May 31st. 5-2. So what is the significance of May the 2nd? Significance of that is at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, if I'm not mistaken, you will be able to go online to one of Disney's sites. You'll easily be able to find it. Maybe we'll put the URL in the description. maybe we won't. And you'll be able to go on there and you will be able to reserve a no-cost reservation for a day between May 31st and June 23rd. Now, you still have to have a ticket to the park. Don't think you're walking in there without anything like that. But you're going to have one of these reservations in addition to your park ticket. And so what this reservation really affords you, we don't have all the details on yet. I think more of that will be available on the 2nd of May when these reservations go up for the grabbing. But it sounds like you're going to get this and you're going to be able to go into Galaxy's Edge. You're going to go into Star Wars Land and you can run around for about 4 hours. Now, how they're going to know at the end of the 4 hours, they're going to, you know, beat it, bozo, and, you know, start throwing people out. I don't think so. From what I can gather so far, there's an honor system. I did have one thought, you know, I've been to places before where you're touring facilities or you're doing something, you're there reporting on something or whatever. And so the name badge that the facility gives you, it actually has a circle. Now it's just a black circle. Outlined, looks white in the middle, looks like no big deal. And as you go, you are only allotted a certain amount of time in that facility. So as you get closer to the end of that time, whether it's, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours, if it's all day, if you're there for a few days, you know, it's 48 hours. At the end of that 48 hours, all of a sudden in the middle of that, you know, that little circle appears a big red stop sign. And that means anybody that saw you wearing that, and you have to have it because that, you know, allows passage throughout the areas. Anybody that saw that red stop sign, you know, they're gently but also firmly grabbing your arm and escorting you to the exit. So maybe they do something like that. They won't. I thought maybe that'd be a kind of a funny solution. And it could be done in a classy way, you know, a nice button for the shirt, something like that, or the backpack, a lanyard, if you will. But
limited edition keepsake.
Yeah, you know, something like that, a take home, if you will, and so a keepsake. So that's what I understand. So on the 2nd of May, 10 a.m., you go on there, you get your reservation, still need to get a park ticket. I don't know where you're going to stay. The hotels are packed. And they're, I mean, what, $561 to $763 a night for the three property hotels. And they will, you know, you'll get that reservation. You got 4 hours to run around in there. You're not going to get on the Falcon. You know, that's a known fact. You're probably just going to go to Ronto Roasters and, you know, you'll have a delicious meat. So that's what I know. Walt Disney World, as far as I can tell, again, you know, some of this is still rumors, but it doesn't sound like Walt Disney World is going to have the reservation requirement at this time when they do open in August. Again, like I said, this is, I have the same information you all do. A few little bits here and there, but yeah. What do you know, Scar? You got to be able to correct some of that shenanigans.
I think it's mostly just, once again, rumors and speculation. I know some people have said that there's going to be a standby group. So people who have reservations go in, and then depending on the level of crowd, they'll bring in some people out of that standby line. So as much as Disney says, hey, you got to get the ticket first.
Sure.
There will potentially be a standby line. I've heard, like you said, 4 hours. I've heard 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's, but I don't think Disney knows for sure. I bet they're still figuring it out themselves. And I know people have talked about wristbands, like, you know, if you got the red one or if you got the blue one, you know, all red bands got to go. The blue bands are coming in, stuff like that. I know the 2 hour window, somebody had said that, maybe it was on Twitter, they had said that you could probably get on a ride and maybe do one shop in that like 2 hour window, because they would bring in enough people not to overwhelm the attraction for more than like a 2 hour wait. So it'd be maybe an hour and then an hour to maybe do a shop or two. But yeah, it seems like Disney hasn't released that. So there's just so much like speculation on what it could be.
Okay. You know, that's, yeah, a lot of questions, you know, not a ton of information on these. I mean, you have 14 acres worth of this, you know, brand new area. You're going to have all these people wanting to take pictures. You're going to have them wanting to experience stuff and eat stuff and drink stuff. And, you know, I'm got to imagine that the restrooms are going to be pretty nice. They're going to want to, you know, relieve themselves in there. So there's lots of cool stuff to see. I don't know how you're going to get that done in 2 hours. Hopefully it's four. But also hopefully, like you said, you know, it's not just going to be people allowed, you know, by way of reservation, because could you imagine somebody travels, you know, they travel overseas to get here. They didn't have all the information. They didn't listen to the podcast. And so now they don't know that they needed this reservation. And they're sitting there. They're huge Star Wars fans. They've been fans their whole lives. They've got all kinds of stuff around the house. And now now they're just going to, they can just peer in, you know, ask somebody when they come out, hey, what'd you think? You know, and I, you know, shake your hand, you know, like it that would be so disappointing, I feel like. And
yeah, it would, you know, for sure. That's why I'm going to take a little, I'm going to wait a little, you know, let it breathe, let the land breathe a little bit first. Yeah. I've always wanted to go to a place like this right at the beginning, because, you know, in some cases there'll be effects that happen in the very beginning in this land that unfortunately will probably get broken or not come back within the first year or two.
Hatbox Ghost, for example, who's back now, but was gone for a very long time.
Yeah. And then with Indiana Jones, there was a lot of effects in that case.
The ice.
Classic ice effect. What's another interesting fact, and I'm not sure how they'll do this, but with three entrances into the land, of course, Star Wars Land takes up the whole property behind Frontierland, and there's an entrance from Fantasyland, there's an entrance from Frontierland. These are all the areas like behind Thunder Mountain and the old Skyway Station. And then the third entrance is over by Critter Country. And I think it would probably be a good idea if, say, the Fantasy Frontier entrances are into the land, and then maybe the Critter Country is out, so you don't have so many bottlenecks. So like, that's the way out, so you funnel people into the village area, so that's where the shops are, the Millennium Falcon, and then as you progress through the land, you eventually go to where the First Order, or not the First Order, but the Resistance area, Rise of the Resistance, and then out towards Critter Country. I think, to me, that would be like an early day efficiency to keep the land somewhat intact, like crowd-wise.
Okay. That sounds... You know, there's just so much preparation, you know, and I'm sure you'll go into that in a little bit more, or maybe a lot more detail. They've done a lot of preparation. You know, let's just take the whole planning, the scale, the rise, the Imagineering, all that kind of stuff, the theming, all that. Take that all out of the picture. They've done so much to prepare for these crowds. Do you think they're blowing it out of proportion a little bit? I don't think they are, because the place is just, I mean, it's more crowded now than it's ever been. You know, $561 to $763 a night. They're thinking they can justify that. And so far they are. People are buying, you know, people are booking the hotel rooms. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar. I think a lot of people at home may not be. And that's not I don't mean that as a slight, but there was are you familiar with Club Disney?
No.
It was in the late 90s. You remember the thing, though, in the Bay Area? I remember, and this originated in a different state. But I don't know. Do you remember those commercials for Discovery Zone? Come and easy at Discovery Zone. You know that? It was in San Jose or something. Okay. Well, Discovery Zone is like a Chuck E. Cheese for a little bit older kids. Maybe there is like some, like, you put your hands on something, your hair stands up. Now you know science. Michael Scott. Something kind of like that. So Disney put together this goofy thing under Michael Eisner. And what it was called Club Disney, and it was basically Disney's version of Chuck E. Cheese. Now, I'm not knocking Chuck E. Cheese, they're still around. Club Disney came out in the 90s or whatever, and Eisner had built this up to be so much, and it existed within one of the promenades in like Thousand Oaks or something, I think. So like a mall, like an outdoor mall or an indoor mall, some kind of mall, and they put it in there. And they had a grand opening sometime in the 90s. And basically, Eisner told the city, he told like Ventura County Sheriff's Department or something, it was one of these groups, that to expect tens of thousands of people to show up. You know how many people showed up to that thing? Less than 1,000. So you've got these cops and these sheriffs, and roads are blocked, and there's crowd control. They didn't have riot guys. I don't think it's a different time, 90s, but they still, it was a whole thing. You know, they really prepared, and they ended up putting more Club Disneys, I think, in some other locations. But, and there was definitely huge expansion plans as Eisner did. But I just hope that they're accurately forecasting and projecting, you know, these crowds. I want it to be as seamless and as enjoyable for everybody as possible, but I can't help but wonder, will this be another Club Disney? It opened in 97, it closed in 99. Obviously, they're not going to close Star Wars Land in 2 years. There's more we can say on that if they ever wanted to repurpose the area. I'll leave that alone for now.
I think that when it comes to the crowds, that's a good point about Club Disney. I think the crowds will be there. I do think some people are going to be like, I'm going to wait and see. Like, you know, they've been hyping the crowds, like the news media, you know, your online videos and websites, stuff like that. They've been really hyping the crowds. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to pull like a wait and see. You could see that with a lot of Disney World reservations and stuff like that. People are doing like a wait, you know, to wait for Star Wars Land to open. There's been a lot of pretty good discounts for Disney World this year because a lot of people, I think, have been waiting. I think Disney has actually done a good job with the preparation for this land. Are you familiar with Project Stardust?
No, I actually know very little, so please.
Okay, so this is when I knew that at least they were taking it seriously, which I was really happy about. So Project Stardust is to expand the park and to take out bottlenecks that make getting around Disneyland hard. Disneyland, of course, the oldest of all the parks. It's very small, was never meant for this many people. And so what they've been doing is from the front of the park to the back of the park is open up as much pathway as possible, but also do it in a classy way. And I think so far, besides one instance that's just terrible, they've done a really, really good job. So the first project they did was Small World. So Small World, they used to have the queue for it used to back up into the parade route. And so that before the parade, they'd have to take out all the posts and stuff like that and then close off that area. Sometimes they would even close Small World. So what they did was they opened up a bunch of land kind of to the right of Small World, and they made a whole bunch of switchbacks, and they took the parade route and they kind of bumped it a little bit into the old motorboat cruise area. So that area is now like a clean like curve. And I believe Small World's queue can now hold like 120 minutes worth of people in that area now, so that they don't have to do anything when a parade comes through there, which is really awesome. And then a second area would be the... So a second area is the Dumbo queue. So if you remember, Dumbo used to have its queue wrap around the front of it, and then it went off a little bit to the side. So what they did was they put awnings and they made this whole back area. So they made the whole back section the queue for Dumbo, which then opened up the whole path in front of Dumbo for a queue area or for walkways, so more people can fit through there. So that's really good. And then lots of areas throughout the park, they've scaled back planters. And that's kind of a sad fact because Disneyland has so much charm in that it has all these planters and trees, whereas Disney World, kind of a negative towards that, is they've really scaled back the amount of trees and planters throughout, especially the hub in those areas. And it's kind of sad, but understandably to the point where Disney World is very crowded and they need more space. But I think Disneyland has done a way more classy job of doing this. And then if you look, you know, go from the back of the park to Small World to the front of the park, just recently they've expanded the curbs, like dramatically expanded the curbs. And for me, that's great. As a wheelchair, you kind of have to like fight and queue yourself up to be able to find a curb that you can go down. So way more curbs. And then in the main street or the in front of the castle, so the hub, they've gotten rid of the curb all the way across there. It looks a little funny, but I think in the end it'll probably be okay on that one. So what do you think about some of these ones? They did a ton of work over in New Orleans Square. They got rid of a lot of those planter areas, but the thing is, it's not a huge negative. When you first see them remove the planters, you get really worried, but a lot of the planters they've got rid of were just kind of like grassy areas. And from going to the park in December, some of the areas that I've seen them expand have been really good because some of those areas are really hard to traverse in a wheelchair and they're way more open than they used to be. Project Stardust also accounts for the castle. So they're completely, you know, refreshing the castle. So that's going to look really nice when it comes back up. We can talk more about that in another podcast because there is some like color changes coming to that. But the negative, this is what gets me. But again, this is what gets me.
All right,
it's one of those silly things.
What's so bad about removing some planters, making more area, less bottlenecks, enjoyable for all? What could possibly be bad about it, you know?
Okay. Adventureland's entrance. Do you remember how it has that little swoop over the Adventureland sign? You have those tusks and the mask and all that stuff.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, there's fire.
Yeah, and you know that there's that little post that goes into the ground and it creates that little like corridor to the right side. So there's like a post that goes into the ground and it's hard to explain, but there was a little...
I know what you're talking about.
Little walkway. There's a little walkway and that little walkway for some reason, as long as I've been going to Disneyland, I've loved that little walkway and I always liked walking through it. Now, when I look at that, it always reminds me of the time I went to Indiana Jones for the first time when it opened, because the line was so long that it went out of Adventureland, it went through that little thing, and then down Main Street. And for some reason, I always look at that and think, man, that's the line for Indiana Jones used to go through.
And you're
through
talking
that.
About, I'm just going to, so for people doing a visual here,
yeah.
If you're looking at Adventureland from, you know, the kind of by the plaza or something over there, now it's like that confection place, Jolly Holiday Bakery, something like that. So yeah. if you're turning around that corner and you're looking, you're about to get on that bridge to go into Adventureland, it's to the right side, and you can actually, it's almost like you go into the, like a toy store, and there's like a regular size door for everybody, and there's that little door for kids. Like, you can actually go around and enter through that, like, kind of smaller area. You're still going over the bridge, still, you're going to make it to the same place, but it's a little magical, you know, kind of pass through for good luck.
They're removing that. And it makes me sad because it's just a little thing that I always remember as a kid going to Disneyland. It makes sense because people just assume just to hang out in that area. So it cuts off like a quarter of the walkway. People think that you can store strollers under it. No, it's a pathway. Get that thing out of there. But I see why they're doing it. But I'm just sad because it's going away. And it's something I remember from the park. Project Stardust also accounts for the beautiful brick that is now installed in the horse-drawn streetcar area, which is really cool.
Yes.
So Project
right
Stardust,
down the middle, you know, there's some cool before and afters. You know, there's like, you look at the middle of Main Street, and for a while, and I just haven't noticed, but it's so like, it's just like that dark kind of like, you know, pavement right there, that blackish grayish, whatever. But now they've got that strip of brick running down the middle, and you know, the horse is there with the fluffy feet and everything. It looks really nice.
Yeah. And I'm happy about that. Because that looks really good. Sad about that one thing, but overall it's been great. The rocks are still in Tomorrowland, which I have no idea why they're still there. But that'll help, you know, for the crowds that are going to be coming. What, you know, when I look at Star Wars Land and I'm thinking about all these cool food and merchandise, how is that going to affect the rest of the park in the long run?
I knew that we'd have to get to this. I've been sad about it. And this is, of course, mere speculation. Why don't we do this instead? Why don't you mention a little bit about how immersive the Star Wars Land is really going to be, and how it's going to block everything else out, and it's going to have things there that you just simply cannot get anywhere else. Maybe in some way it's similar to something you can get, you know, either in other areas of the park or even outside of the park, but how specific and dialed in it is for Star Wars Land. Give the people an idea, and then you'll really be able to heighten the fact that once they walk out of Star Wars Land, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like waking up from a daydream, and all of a sudden you're extremely disappointed.
So let's start with Savi's workshop, because you remember I mentioned about the lightsabers. So a lot of what's going on with Star Wars Land is a response to Harry Potter. Disney sees that Harry Potter is making bank on plastic wands, the special butter beers, things like that. And they kind of beat Disney at what Disney does best in theming and immersion and stuff like that. They just kind of took it to the next level. That's why this competition going between the two is so important. So Savi's is a lightsaber building like experience. So similar to, say, Ollivander's wands in a Universal, if you're familiar with that.
Sure.
So there's supposed to be like force ghosts at one point where they talk to you. You go into this chamber, and looking at the concept art, it's kind of a darkened room. There's candles up in the sides. There's a lot of like, you know, Star Wars writing, Erebus, I believe it's called, you know, all over the place. Lots of things hanging from it. And then there'll be a character, Savvy, he'll be in there kind of guiding everybody through the process of building a lightsaber. You can pick between, like, I think so far they released three different ones, a dark side, a light side. So in some of those, there's like elemental. So your lightsaber can be made of like pieces of wood and leather. And there's like a tooth. And then there's like an ancient, I think it was like Jedi guard. So the lightsabers can be yellow, if you're familiar with how the Jedi guard works and all of that. So it's this whole process of you assembling this. You're putting the kyber crystals inside of it. And then there's a ceremony where you all raise your wands, and not wands, but your lightsabers, and you turn them on. I think that's when Yoda visits at some point. And it's just this like incredible experience. Now, it's going to be quite costly. The hilt of the lightsaber, so just the hilt of it, is rumored. Once again, these are rumors because they have not officially released any pricing, but somebody was able to get this during a press thing. $49 for the hilt, and I think... No, it's $109 for the hilt and $49 for the blade. So the blade is what lights up, and you can choose between like green, blue, purple, red, of course, for the Sith, and I believe yellow. So those are the current known colors that you can get your lightsaber in. So that's like
okay. And for those people at home that didn't have the paper out, or they didn't have the TI-82, so you guys weren't doing the math. It's about, I mean, the prices for these lightsabers, it starts around $150. It starts around $150 for a toy.
It's, I've heard it's made of metal.
Well, I mean, that's neat. I'm not saying that, you know, these are different than the plastic toy sabers that we've come to get used to. You had a Darth Vader one, right? Didn't you have that Darth Vader one?
Yeah, and sadly didn't make it through a move and got crunched. So I'm hoping to replace that, by the way.
Yeah, for some reason I thought that one went up to Everett or something, but it doesn't matter. So about $150 for a complete lightsaber starting out. That's probably the most boring color and the most basic package, but... Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, that place sounds awesome. What did you say the name of that was again?
Savvy's Workshop. Savvy apparently scavenged like parts to make lightsabers or something like that. So that's like one place that you can go and have like a merchandising experience. Instead of going to a shop and looking through different things and buying it and just heading out with your Disney bag, like you're literally going through a whole experience of like assembling the lightsaber. You got Yoda, he's coming in there talking to you. You've got like actual, like, you know, entertainment cast members there that are in full costume doing the things, like effects like go off in the room. Now that's that. Apparently these are now called merchandising experiences, now coming to Galaxy's
Edge. Well,
that's
the Droid Depot is supposed to be a merchandising experience also. Are you excited about that? There's, you know, you can get a little droid. He's like, you know, maybe the size of a toaster oven, but then there's like full scale, you know, Captain Rex or BB-8s cruising around on the floor, giving you a bad time as you're, you know, building your new friend, building this new beautiful shiny droid.
So the droids are also a really cool thing, and I don't know how this is all going to come together because once again they're being very tight-lipped on pricing, but. You assemble a droid, and this droid, like you said, it's kind of a decent sized droid, maybe about a foot and a half or so tall. Like they're pretty big. They have personality chips in them. So when I look at that, it's like, do you have to pay for that separate, or is that something that comes in as like a whole package? I'm not sure yet. But what they show was that these droids first can move around with a controller. They have like you know, wheels in them. They can spin their heads, different things like that. They have personality chips. So say you put the personality of a resistance fighter inside the droid, when it goes near first order things like stormtroopers or the first order, they have some ships that have been landed in the area that you can go, you know, get your photo with. When they're around that area, they get scared. So you can have them in like a backpack that you can buy, or the like the adopt a cat or dog, you know, box. You can have one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
But the droids will interact with things. So that'll be scared. Like, oh, I'm a resistance fighter. I'm scared around the stormtroopers. Or if it's a first order droid, he's, you know, he's great around there. But if he goes near the resistance base, he gets all freaked out. So there's just so many cool like things within that droid like building place. Like these are experiences. And when you look at the concept art for these buildings, they're fascinating. They have all these like looking like dead droids hanging from the ceilings, you know, just spare parts. Clearly, there's going to be a BB-8 animatronic and another droid in the main area. So these are like fully like, you know, animatronics that'll be moving around. So it's like a whole experience when you're in there. Those are like two of the main like merchandising experiences now at Galaxy's Edge places. There are like,
do you think there's any chance of an Easter egg in there? Maybe a Wally floating around, maybe a piece of Wally, maybe the brassiere, the lunchbox. Is there going to be any, or are they really like, they're not fooling around with any of that kind of stuff? This is all Star Wars, everything.
I wouldn't be surprised if they snuck in a few like non-Star Wars droids in that area as little Easter eggs. I mean, how could they not?
Mr. Tom Morrow, maybe he's around, just somebody from the past, you know, bring an old friend somewhere.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that. Now, for the standard shops, so those are the shops that, you know, you walk in, the cast member hanging out in the back. So you got Doc Ondor's, I believe that's the right way of pronouncing it, Den of Antiquities. Okay. So that's where you get your, you know, your special merchandise, right? So they have all sorts of things.
What do you mean by that? What's so special in there?
So Doc Andor, I believe his name is all about like antiquity. So he's gone and scavenged all over the place. But the best part is it's not just a name like, oh, that's that guy. He is actually in the shop as an animatronic that you can interact with. You can talk to him. Apparently there's some kind of bartering that you could do with him that they were like, once again, like, eh, we're not talking about it yet. So I don't know what that means, but you could barter with him. But he is in there, this fully articulate animatronic, the moving around in the shop, which sounds really, really cool. Once again, it's like another like either it's a living character in the area or the animatronic in the droid shop. This is another animatronic in a shop, adding more life to the area. And then there that you get your more fancy Star Wars related things like your legendary lightsabers that are pre-built for Darth Vader or Luke,
yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So that's that shop, which is really, really cool looking. In the concept art, you can see him hanging out as an animatronic back there.
Okay. And then, so with a shop like that, I mean, maybe you were already getting to this, but so you're at the Black Spire outpost and you're kind of, you know, you're just kind of rummaging around. It sounds like Doc Ondar's Den of Antiquities is probably going to like, will that be right next to the lightsaber place you were talking about where you can build your own? I know you said that there's some, you know, some very snazzy historic lightsabers in there from all of our best Jedis and dark fellas. But will this eventually transfer yourself in if you wanted to get the custom lightsaber, or is that completely somewhere else? I'm trying to get an idea of the layout and I cannot picture it.
I saw a really great picture where they pointed out where everything was going to be, but I don't remember. I know that Savi's shop is more closer to the Rise of the Resistance attraction. So that's more to the right side near Critter Country. So that would be the far side of the village. Whereas this shop we're talking about, the antiquity shop, is a little closer to the Millennium Falcon. So it's actually a separate area.
Okay. And are any of these, you've talked a couple of times about different droids or, these audio animatronic characters that are going to be around. Are any of them going to actually have AI to the degree where they kind of recognize the person standing in front of them? They might make an offhand comment, about a haircut, a hairdo or a clothing choice for that day or something. You know, will there be any AI to it, or is it all just going to be totally scripted? And, you know,
well, you know, there's been a lot of stuff that they've talked about that doesn't seem to be coming to there's things that have been cut from Star Wars Land.
Oh, of course.
A lot of things like entertainment stuff has been cut. So the question is, like, that was some of the stuff probably where people did more interaction. Like it talked about at one point, if you crashed a Millennium Falcon, you would hear about it when you went into the cantina, stuff like that. And those things, maybe they're still coming, but they haven't really talked about those in a long time because I've been following this for a long time.
Oh, of course you have.
So I wouldn't be surprised if those animatronics, like the one that barters, does make comments to you specifically instead of generic comments.
All right. Well, okay. So that's some of the shops. You're probably getting to a couple more. I know they have, you know, lots of clothing options, some pretty full scale and elaborate looking costumes, and also some plushies for those people that enjoy the squishy things in life. So you have all that kind of stuff. What are those ones are your favorites?
So there's the creature stand where you can, you know, buy like, and a lot of the creatures, they try to make it look handmade, like it was really made in the village. So it's not like this mass produced thing. And I hope they do stick with that. So the creature stand, there's a lot of different creatures you can buy, these little stuffed guys. There's things you can put on your shoulder, like the Jabba's good pal from Return of the Jedi, a little guy with the ears.
That guy was gnarly. Okay.
Yeah. You can get one of those and you can like put them on your shoulder and you can kind of control him. So there's those things at the creature stand. There's I forgot the name of it, but there's a toy store. So there's a toy store also, and that's in the bazaar area.
Oh, that's the Toy Darian.
Yeah, the Toy Darian. That's right. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. So there's that shop, and I'm trying to think if there's any other merchandising shops outside of there's a first order, supply shop, and then you can buy like first order things, and then there'll be a resistance shop over by the Rise of the Resistance attraction, more in like the foresty area outside of the village. So those are the two other shops that I know about. So that's where we got for merchandise so far announced. But the food, so we got the cantina, The cantina is going to sell alcohol. I think we've talked about that. You know, against Walt's wishes, but you know.
And hey, California Adventure's been doing it for a while. Disney World's been doing it for, you know, Cy Snoodles knows how long. There's been parks that have been doing it. So, yep, you know, again, against Walt's wishes, as you said, this is now in Disneyland Park that this is happening. So it's a little offensive, but Club 33 has been doing it for ages. So, I mean, Walt can't get too mad.
So they're going to do that in there, and you're not going to be able to bring them outside of the cantina.
No open container rule. No open container.
So they've got that. Apparently at opening, like, you could only buy drinks and not food in there yet. When this land was announced, a big elaborate dinner show, sit down, you know, much fancier restaurant. It was cut from the budget about a year and a half ago.
Would that have been kind of like a cross between the Blue Bayou and that Aladdin? Remember that Aladdin thing that we went in with the blue drinks? Hey, they've been doing blue drinks for a long time. This is like a part two of that. But would it have been something kind of like that?
Yes. Yeah. Very similar to something like that.
Okay. That's too bad. That's too bad that didn't work out. Did they ever, and not that it doesn't even matter now since they're not going to do it, but what was that show scene supposed to be? Were they acting out an existing thing from the movie, or were these subplots or, you know, kind of fun fan fiction type little stories?
Think of it as like Jabba's Palace.
Okay, so just shenanigans, music review, some beating up or throwing somebody in a cage or a pit with the awful rancor, that kind of stuff?
Yes. Okay. You know, like some of the entertainment people from that. So there's like that restaurant where you get your drinks and stuff like that. And Ronto Roasters?
Yeah, Ronto Roasters. One other question about Mos Eisley Cantina. So, you know what I think would be really neat? And one, if they had the band, and I think I've already heard that the band's going to be there. They're going to have the animatronics of those guys. You know, remember those guys?
Yeah.
They had like a clarinet. So are those guys going to be in there? They're going to be in the cantina playing, you know,
no,
the latest and greatest hits?
No. Oh, that's too bad. It's going to be a DJ.
So I made that up. There'll be a DJ in there. DNG.
DJ BDs. Rex. Captain DJ, Rex.
Oh, I like that.
From Star Tours.
That is a good trade. Good trade. So will there be that guy that comes up every once in a while, you know, like, I have the death sentence on 12 systems. You know, will there be that guy? He doesn't like you either. You know, like I'd like, you know, it'd be fun if they had that kind of stuff going on, but you don't want to frighten somebody prematurely. So,
yeah, these are just a lot of rumors that people have been saying here and there, that there won't be any entertainment cast members in there for the first little bit to see how people like move around and interact with the land. But I bet after makes a while sense. There'll be lots of cool like characters in the cantina just interacting with guests is what I hope.
You know, it'd be kind of fun if they, I don't want to go back to the droid store, the droid depot. But that was one of my favorite in terms of like the, let's say outside of the attractions or the outside of the rides, the artwork that I saw in that, and this is before I saw, you know, before they actually had like real photos, which I still don't know if they do, maybe they do, you've seen them, but, the artist renderings, I thought that the droid depot scene looked the coolest. You know, it kind of reminded me of, you know, Star Wars when it used to have that extended queue and they had all those baskets going by with all the droid parts. And that's one of my favorite, favorite themed queues of any ride of all time. And I was wondering with that droid one, and we already brought up, do you think Wally will be in there? But you know what would be kind of cool is if it showed one of the worker droids was working on Push. Remember the garbage can they used to drive around?
Yeah.
Except they had maybe Push is knocked over and there's a bunch of wires coming out of the back. And you can see like footprints where people have been kicking him because they did that. And, you know, that might be kind of fun. Another Easter egg, you know, just something small, just, you know, people can kind of give each other the little elbow like, hey, check that out. Remember that. Those good times.
Do they not have the baskets in Star Tours anymore?
No, they do. But do you remember when they extended the queue into the Star Trader? Remember, like before they had the Fast Pass. I almost want to say it was before the Fast Pass.
Okay.
You know when they extended it over there? I could be wrong. Somebody's going to correct this, but I feel like there were more. They extended that belt out and they put more of those things, the baskets, to go into that second room. And that might have been a weird dream that I had, but I've always loved that area. So I would like to see And that artist rendering of the Droid Depot, it did remind me of that. So I'm very excited about the Droid Depot, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Fun point is that's the, you know how FastPass actually makes the lines longer, right? It makes the standby lines quite a bit longer. When we were kids, before FastPass ever came out, that extended queue was rarely ever used at all outside of maybe like the first few years of it ever opening. It wasn't until like later when FastPass opened that they like almost always have to use that extended queue back there, that extra little building to the side. That's interesting.
And no pseudo pun intended or anything with this, but you know, the fast passes really do cause a disturbance in the force. I mean, it's not so much that they do affect that ride, the ride that the fast pass is intended for, but they affect a lot of other things going on around the park too. So, there's good things, there's bad things. You know who doesn't like the fast pass? Tony Baxter. So anyway, I'll leave it there. So you're going on. You were talking about a few more foods. I think you got Toronto Roasters.
Yes. One last thing about FastPass, Millennium Falcon, when it comes in, we'll have FastPass someday, but it will not when it first opens.
And only for people that are 6'1" and taller. I don't know. That was a rumor.
That must have been a rumor. So the Roasters are gonna. That's a food thing. When you look at this place, it is incredible themed. It has a pod racer engine cooking some giant Star Wars piece of meat on a spigot. And it just is incredible. And I think you'd mentioned that there's an actual droid kind of like, you know, controlling it.
Yeah. And I can't remember the name of the guy. I think he was like I think they said it was like a former smelter droid or something like that, but he's like this skinny kind of gold guy. And he's operating a couple of mechanical advantage, you know, gears or pulley systems or something to kind of move the meat along. And it's a progression of getting cooked. And I mean, who knows what animal, you know, hopefully not a bantha, who knows what animal, is being cooked there, but it sounds like it's supposed to be pretty tasty. And can you imagine the smells just wafting, you know, around that place?
It looks so, 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 so cool. That concept art is one of my favorites of that roaster coming out. So that looks pretty cool. Now there is another restaurant and but I can't find the piece of concept art and I cannot find the name of it, but it's like a docking bay. So, or like a shuttle bay. And then there's all these like containers open, and that those are the stalls where you go and you get your food. It's a very large, you know, walk up style restaurant. So you think of your Tomorrowland Terrace, things like that kind of a restaurant.
Yeah. Okay. And what you said you couldn't recall the name of that one?
No, but it's something. It has a particular person's name, and it's like it's like a shuttle cargo bay, something like that.
Okay.
But I forgot the name. It's all enclosed, so that's nice for when it's hot.
Okay. Yeah, these will be interesting. So are most of them enclosed? Like, is there, you know, the elements are going to wisp in every once in a while, and or are most of these pretty sealed up?
You know, that's a good point. Is I see most of these things are indoor things, which is nice because I think they should do more keep things more sealed up. You know, especially for those poor folks at Disney World. And even for like here in California, it gets kind of cold, it turns out, in December when we made our trip there. Like,
little Thanksgiving a number of years ago was just
you know, maybe like 50 degrees or something doesn't seem that cold, or like, you know, eventually, like when you're outside for a long period of time, like that eventually gets kind of cold.
Like, yeah, it really does, especially, you know, if you're, it looks like a lot of these foods, though, they're going to be, you know, nice and warm. You've got, you know, oven roasted burra fish and smoked kadu ribs. You've got a lot of stuff to hopefully warm you up. There's like some, you know, a warmed up cookie. Maybe there's just a microwave involved and something that comes out of a plastic bag. But I think what you were referring to is Docking Bay 7 food and cargo, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah, that must be it. Yes. So that does look pretty cool. And when you look at like the food, it's all themed. Like these ribs have like a particular Star Wars creature name to it, and they're served like uniquely, like the colors, the textures they put onto the food. And apparently everything's got a little bit of a spice to it. And I guess that's kind of a theme throughout this particular outpost, is like spices.
Star Wars be spicy. Spice traders, you know. But so you were talking also about, you know, some of these foods and how they're going to be experienced. Can you talk about the Coke bottles, the Sprite, the Dasani?
So I'm excited about this. I know some people out there, they're like, Coke has no place in the land because Coke was not in the Star Wars universe. I see that point.
That, like, we know of.
I see that we know of. I see that point, but they're going to sell it regardless. They're going to bring it in, and it's better that it's done in a themed way than not a themed way. So what we're talking about is that Coke products. So what they're going to sell is Coke, Diet Coke, Sprite. Those are the only three, like, you know, soda beverages that they're going to sell, and a Dasani water bottle. And those are going to probably only be sold within an outdoor vending cart. And they're all themed. They look like thermal detonators, the Coke and the Sprite. And then the Dasani bottle looks like a power canister of some kind. And they're really, really cool looking. They did a good job with it. Coke spelled in the Star Wars language and stuff along those lines. And I think it looks really, really cool. And I think they went the extra mile with that, which I appreciate.
So the Star Wars language was, I think you said it was Aurabesh. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to pronounce it specifically, so I probably butchered it there. But Aurabesh is the language. You know, it's kind of, I think they called it like Galactic Basic. I don't know. Yeah, I read some of those, the kind of the weird books. But anyway, that's what the Coke label will look like. I almost feel like one of these Cokes is a collector's item in itself. You know, and it's probably $9. So, you know, there you go. There's your souvenir.
Yeah. No. I wonder how much they're going to charge for these. But I think it's really, really cool. And I'm sure. Looking forward to, you know, I don't drink either of those, but I want one for the shelf. I think it'd be really nice.
You've talked it up. You've talked up the food and the experience and the 4 hours that you have to run around. What are you worried about with Star Wars Land aside from the Millennium Falcon ride not opening, you know, on time and people being disappointed about that? Is there anything that you're nervous about or that you're, you know, is not going to work or how do you feel about overall?
Overall, what I'm worried about for the land specific is crowding. So when they get rid of the reservation system, if they allow people just to kind of live in Star Wars Land. I could see that potentially being a thing with annual passporters. You get your annual passport. You pretty much, that's where you hang out for your most of your life is there. That's a worry that Disney has, is people just creating just a complete hangout zone in Star Wars Land. You know, can't blame them really. To the point where it's like, it's just jammed, crowded. The second thing that I worry about is the degradation of the themed items. Like I said, the food and the merchandise, that eventually, you know, they're going to start selling generic, like Disneyland 2020 t-shirts, things like that. Mm-hmm. into the merchandise stalls would be a huge disappointment in the coming years. If that became a thing, those are the things that I worry about with that land.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just going to come down to the crowds. You know, a lot of the stuff that you said there, a lot of it is really crowd focused, crowd related. I mean, you know, of any of these restaurants that offer any kind of traditional lunch or dinner where you're sitting down, I mean, do any of them even accept reservations, or has that not been discussed?
I think all of these are walk-up restaurants, like I said, similar to Hungry Bear, your Tomorrowland Terrace, things like that.
And so they don't, obviously, they're probably not a part of the Disney dining plan, I wouldn't guess, because walk-ups, I don't think usually, they don't usually get to adhere to those.
Ah, man, if for Disney World people out there, I don't know how your dining plan works. It's very confusing. We don't have dining plans like at Disneyland.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I'm just, you know, trying to include everybody here. But yeah, it's interesting. It's a lot to think about. So, you know, this podcast, I'm not sure where we're at in terms of minutes, but I feel like we would be upset with ourselves if we didn't, you know, bring up one of the pragmatic, problematic things here. And that would be how immersive this environment is. It's wonderful. We're very excited about it. We get used to it. We get spoiled by it.
Yeah.
And then when you leave, what is the rest of the park going to seem like? Because, and you know, you hate to take away, Disneyland has the best theming aside from a couple areas at Universal, I must say. Disney has, you know, this, you know, has always had, you know, this you know, upper echelon you know, theming going on over there, but they've surpassed themselves with the Star Wars Land. So when you go into these other places, you go to Adventureland or, you know, don't go anywhere near Tomorrowland, but, you know, you go to Frontierland or some of these other areas, they're not going to seem as themed, right? You know, there's going to be a regular Coke. And, you know, I know that there's no Westward Ho McDonald's there anymore, but there's going to be a lot more exposure to the elements, to the outside, you know. Is that going to be disenfranchising, do you think, that'll cause people to say, hey, I do really like Star Wars Land, but I'm gonna dog on the rest of this joint because they just they've got a long ways to go to really, really bring this thing in. And could this really change Disneyland as a whole going forward?
I see there being a little bit of a problem when people go to Star Wars Land and they're really immersed in this land, and I think they get just a taste of this now with Cars Land. You know, you get into Radiator Cars Springs Land. And, you know, for the most part, the merchandise there is specific to the land. Mm-hmm. There's unique things. The food's unique.
You feel different when you walk down that road, when you walk down into, you know, there's like the music, and it's really funneling you, obviously, you know, towards, you know, down to the end by, you know, Stanley, and then, you know, hang a right to go on the ride. But yeah, there is that feeling. And you think that will exist in Star Wars Land, obviously?
I think it'll be much more so. But then, you know, you go into other areas, and one of the prime examples is Frontierland. You go into the shops next to the Golden Horseshoe, so you have the old Pendleton shop, things like that. And what you see within these shops is generic merchandise in a Frontier setting. So you get your cast member, you know, decked out in their Frontier costume, the walls, you know, they got the old West guns up there,
you
they got the cowboy hats,
yeah.
Like the old buffalo on the wall, but then they're selling very generic merchandise in this shop. And it's something that I think Disney has done better with in the recent decade. But the generic, you know, 2020 Disneyland shirt.
I knew, man, I was going to try to steal that from you. I knew you were going to do it. Yeah, just that standard issue. All the stuff you can get at the Emporium or the, you know, the big Disney store in downtown Disney, you know, that stuff is available throughout those rest of those lands. And yeah, you've got the cowhand or whoever is in there. Howdy. Is surrounded by these plastic boxes of, you know, gummy bears and shirts with the characters running around the letters. And it has nothing to do with the Old West.
And that, of course, wasn't the case up until the 80s, where all these shops were selling very specific merchandise. So you take New Orleans, for instance. New Orleans was one of the most unique areas. Walt's wife's name. I always goof it up.
Yeah,
Lillian. Diane was his daughter.
The daughter, of course.
All right, I goofed that up. But Lillian, she used to go just to New Orleans Square to shop in the shops there. They used to have the one of a kind shop, and they had actually like really unique antiques within there. It's the one of a kind shop. And those shops have disappeared, and, you know, maybe they're pirate related, maybe they're Haunted Mansion related. At least it's something nowadays more pertaining to the rest of the land, you know, being Pirates of the Caribbean, the Haunted Mansion's homeland. Mm-hmm. But especially even before that, those shops were selling 2020 Disneyland shirts with the characters intertwined, you know.
What happened in the 80s? It's Reaganomics, or it was Eisner, or it was both. Like what happened?
It was maximize your profits per square footage type stuff.
The consumerism just got insane, and there was all that political correctness stuff. And not that there's anything wrong with that, because it's usually there to, you know, protect and keep people from being disenfranchised or whatever. But you're right; it really did. It really did kind of like bastardize that whole environment and really make it. You could get anything anywhere, not anything anywhere. You get the same thing everywhere. You know?
Yeah.
Sad deal. But it has gotten better. They have that wagon over by Haunted Mansion now where you can get the salt shakers or the wine toppers and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
but that's a good thing. In the last like 8 to something years that they have improved more unique merchandise for areas, because for a while you couldn't get a specific piece of merchandise for any attraction or any land. And to some degree that's gotten a little bit better. But when you go into Star Wars Land and you have those amazing merchandising experiences, you're going to kind of look at other areas of the park and wonder, like, how come I can't have one of these experiences here or there? And I think when Disney does work in Disneyland and other areas, they're going to have to kind of continue what they've done with Star Wars Land in these other areas to try to match that level of immersion that you have in there. And I think that could be a broader topic of about, are you immersed in a land or are you in Disneyland? You know, back in the day, you know, the Matterhorns had little Disneyland plaques on the things. And I think that's an interesting conversation is like, are you in Disneyland full of magical things or are you in Star Wars land? You know, very specifically, if you get what I mean by that.
I feel that. Yeah.
You know, that there was the sense that that in some cases, Disneyland's had the thing where you are in Disneyland, but this place is full of magical things. You're in Disneyland with magical things, or are you in a very specific themed place? And I think Disneyland's kind of had that. And you can look at that, like I said, with the Matterhorn, where they used to have these little nameplates all over it saying Disneyland, and same with Autopia, where it had like D's on it and stuff like that for Disneyland. And or is that supposed to be like a specific, you know, Tomorrowland symbol for Tomorrowland? Because you're not in Disneyland, you're on Tomorrowland. I don't know. I think Disneyland's going to have a identity crisis with Star Wars Land eventually, where they're going to have to figure out how that is going to be the same experience throughout the park.
I think some of what you're talking about there, and Disney does a very good job to try to avoid this, I feel like, as much as possible, but maybe hasn't succeeded with it, you know, very well recently. And that's the whole thing about, you know, really forcing someone's experience on a ride, an attraction, an area, where like they tell the story so well and so specifically and chapter by chapter, move by move, you know, they tell the whole story. So you really don't have to use your imagination towards anything. Everything is explained. Here's what this is. Here's what this is. Here's what this is. And there's a lot of reasons to say how things have become that way. I think just our overall ability to get information, you know, because of the internet, because of stuff like that, you know, we have so many ways of, you know, getting information on things. We want to know what the story is behind everything. And I think with a lot of the, especially the OG Imagineers, the good ones, you know, they would frame up a ride. And they would, you know, have you look at this for a second, look over here. And it's not always well explained. It's up to you to interpret that the way you will. And so when Disneyland had that, like, overall, like, it was actually a kingdom, like you said, there's D's on the submarines and there's, you know, Disneyland stuff on the Matterhorn. It's like, this is just a kingdom. There's a lot of wild stuff going on in here, but this is a kingdom. It's not Tomorrowland, Fantasyland, New Orleans Square, now Star Wars Land. And Star Wars Land is getting very granular. Like, be real, like that is one enterprise all in there. And I don't mean enterprise like Star Trek. That is just, that's one thing, you know, that's one intellectual property element right there that is taking up an entire land. Like, when has that, aside from Cars Land, I guess, you know, but like, it's a funny direction they're going. And I hope it doesn't like silo or segment the park too much. You know, because what that can do is it can, like you said, people will go to Star Wars Land and they'll be big Star Wars people and they'll just be bonkers about it. They'll be in there all day. They'll be doing their homework in there and, you know, making it difficult with the crowd control things. They will get, that's their thing. But there'll be a lot of people that come to the park that at Star Wars, they'll take it or leave it. Like they want to see some other stuff, but it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how much Disney will choose to take care of those other areas that aren't their big money maker. You know, that didn't sell out the Grand California or didn't sell out, you know, the, what is the Pleasure Hotel, Pixar Pleasure Pier Hotel? it didn't sell that thing out for $600 a night, you know?
Yeah.
You know, somebody wanting to go there to try to pull the sword and stone. I don't think anybody travels there just to do that, but that guy's not paying $600 a night at the pier. They might be, but I don't think they are. So I just hope that Disney is careful with this and that they, you know, I don't know, that they take care of the rest of the park and kind of decide who they are. Are they land focused, aka like product focused, or are they more like solution or experience focused? And I think in time, you know, like time will tell. I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So that's a good discussion. I think we could talk about more is the kingdom, the experience or the story aspect of Disneyland, because I think that's something that not a lot of people have talked about. And yeah, with Star Wars
I didn't want
Land,
to carry on too long, but it definitely seemed like the segue was there, so I figured I'd say something. You know?
Yep, and I think we got a good taste of what Star Wars Land has to offer. I'm very excited about it. I can't wait to visit it and see both attractions. Once both our attractions are operating and we can enjoy both of them, I think it's going to open up Disneyland in a way that will add so much needed capacity to that park. and it's already busting at its seams, but now it has a whole bunch of new acres and two rides to absorb a whole bunch more crowds. And these are relatively wheelchair accessible vehicles. So that
I love that.
That makes me happy.
You can't be mad at Stardust, man. They made a little more room for you. They took out one of your favorite little things, but it's almost like you lost one thing, but you gained a little bit more. Hopefully you'll see it that way.
Yeah, and I think what they did with Dumbo to Small World, those are huge improvements on improving the overall look to the park. They also did do a little thing to the Mark Twain's boat thing, or not boat, but the entrance area. So there's lots of little changes there. But we could go on forever about the things coming to Star Wars Land, and I think we'll have plenty more to talk about before it opens. And once it finally has opened, I'm not going to watch any videos of the rides. I'm going to save it. What are you going to do in that case?
I never watch the videos. You know, there's still a lot of stuff I haven't seen. Every once in a while, I'll accidentally see something. I try to turn it off as quick as I can. But this is episode 9. Episode 10, we'll be doing more on the news. And basically, Star Wars Land from this point forward will be some matter of focus in every one of our episodes going forward for an unforeseeable future, because there's so much to say. And more will be coming out. So many things that are rumors now will be either, they'll either be confirmed, or it'll be squashed, and we'll just keep going like that until we are in the park, until your wheels and my paws are in the park.
And I cannot wait for that. And there we go. So that is episode 9 of the Backlot Boys.
Wait, Screech.
Oh,
I have
no.
One thing.
Oh, no.
You know how I like to do this at the end of the episode? So if Scar was one of the vehicles, he doesn't have to, it could be a flying vehicle, it'd be a hovering vehicle, a droid, not a droid, some kind of vehicle, a transport. So he could be a transport, he could be hovering, or he could be flying. He cannot be a planet or a space station. What would he be? And I will give my answer right off the bat. I think, and this has nothing to do with, you know, medical things or whatever, but I think he would be that medical ship in Empire Strikes Back at the end. You know, he's floating through and that cool looking robot is hooking Luke up and dealing with the missing hand and all that kind of stuff. Because it was just, it was a ship that did all kinds of really neat things. And you know, I'm not going to embarrass him here, but I think that would be what I think he is. But you guys in the comments, what ship, what craft in Star Wars, hovering, flying, or transporting would Scarby?
Well, with that, let me know, what ship am I? And always love doing these. Can't wait for our next one. And until next time, we'll see you later.